for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Russian-backed government forces in southwest Syria resumed a two-week offensive Wednesday after negotiations with rebels over a government takeover failed. The Syrian Observatory of Human Rights said Russian warplanes targeted the towns of Tafaz, northwest of the provincial capital of Daraa, and Saida to the east. In the recently recaptured town of eastern Gharia, Ba'ath party official Hassan al-Rufai predicted in a matter of days territory reaching Jordan's border would be taken. Jordan, home to hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees, has been seeking a negotiated settlement to the latest fighting. Hundreds of thousands have fled the latest fighting. Anders Petersen is the UN resident and humanitarian coordinator in Jordan.
We have since 19 June more than 270,000 internally displaced people in this region. This is the largest displacement of people in the south since the beginning of the war. In total, we have more than 700,000 people that are in danger. So it's more than one-third of the population actually right now fleeing from hostilities.
Meanwhile, Islamic State late Tuesday confirmed a son of the leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, had been killed in Homs province fighting Syrian and Russian forces. Mali's constitutional court Wednesday approved two dozen candidates to run in that country's July 29th presidential election. Among them is incumbent Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. Campaigning is expected to get underway Saturday. The election had been hampered by a two-week strike by organizers over working conditions. Elections have been repeatedly delayed because of an Islamist insurgency. This is VOA News. Two British citizens are said to be in critical condition in England after being exposed to Novichok, a Russian-made nerve agent that hospitalized a former spy and his daughter in March. Sally Davies is chief medical officer for England.
Following events in March, we have a well-established response to this type of incident and clear processes to follow. Our priorities at this time are to care for the patients and to understand the circumstances surrounding how these two individuals became unwell, thus ensuring there is no further risk to the public's health from this incident.
The two are identified only as a 44-year-old woman and 45-year-old man. The location was their home in Amesbury near Salisbury, where Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia were sickened. Both have since recovered. Paul Mills, Deputy Chief Constable for Wiltshire Police, said the most recent incident occurred on Saturday.
Our inquiries, supported by local partner agencies and the counter-terrorism policing network, are ongoing, and a full multi-agency response has been coordinated, which currently consists of 12 partner agencies.
It remains unclear how the couple came into contact with Novichok. In Poland, another dispute with the European Union has erupted after a new law went into effect requiring the retirement of a third of the country's Supreme Court. The EU said the ruling Law and Justice Party is trying to exert control over the country's courts. Hundreds protested outside the Supreme Court building in Warsaw, chanting Lech Wałęsa, the former Polish president and Nobel laureate, instrumental in ending communist rule in Poland. He is opposed to the new law. Poland's prime minister defended it, saying each country has a right to shape its legal system. The UN rights chief, Zayd Raad al-Hussein, Wednesday said members of the Muslim Rohingya community continue fleeing Myanmar, also known as Burma, to escape violence, persecution, and killings.
Thousands of Rohingya people continue to flee Rakhine State. As of mid-June, there have been 11,432 new arrivals in Bangladesh in 2018.
Myanmar official Kyo Mol Tun called the UN report distorted and exaggerated. Turkish election officials made it official Wednesday. Incumbent Recep Tayyip Erdogan won last month's presidential election, while his coalition held a majority in parliament. He also has new enhanced powers. He'll be sworn in to a five-year term Monday. The Guatemalan government Wednesday raised the official death toll of missing from last month's Fuego volcano eruption to 332, above the nearly 200 who disappeared since eruptions began June 3rd. It also confirmed 113 are known to have died when superheated flows scorched nearby villages. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
We'll be right back. morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, July the 5th, and here are the stories we're covering for you this morning. In Cameroon, the government is urging children in the eastern part of the country to stop leaving school to work in the gold industry. The campaign was launched after a report said 74 people have been killed in the mine accidents this year, the majority of them of school age. And in Zimbabwe, the United Nations has welcomed a decision by the country's High Court to protect children from being forced to attend political rallies. And as Gambians await their new constitution, many in Banjul have reacted to news of the drafting of the new Charter of Laws. The head of the Gambian Constitutional Review Commission says that his commission is independent and that the process will be open, transparent, and impartial.
All the members of the commission recognize that the objective we are embarked upon is a national one, and it is one in which all interests have to be received and considered.
That's Justice Cherno Suleiman Jallo. He's the head of the Gambian Constitutional Review Commission. A UN human rights official is arguing the government of the Central African Republic to establish without delay a Truth and Reconciliation Commission as a pathway to peace.
The situation in the car is becoming unbearable. It reveals more than ever the urgent need to simultaneously bolster protection of civilians, humanitarian aid, combating impunity.
The United Nations independent expert on the situation of human rights in the Central African Republic, Marie-Thérèse Keita-Bokom. She was speaking through an interpreter. And Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni is defending his government's decision to levy a tax on social media. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni is defending his government's decision to levy a tax on social media users in the country. He says Ugandans were using such platforms for, quote, lying and wasting the nation's hard-earned currency on fees to foreign-owned telecom companies. Uganda's new tax law went into effect last week, and it will cost Ugandans at least $20 a year or 5 cents a day. Users of popular social media platforms such as WhatsApp and Facebook were not happy with the new tax and are strongly voicing their opposition to the new tax, with opposition members of parliament, musicians, and many other leaders of civil society holding press conferences calling on the government to scrap the new tax law. The tone of defiance from President Museveni indicates a long debate ahead in Ugandan politics, a debate that is likely to draw lines between those that support the latest move by President Museveni's government and those that see this move as an encroachment on their freedom of expression. In a statement on social media, Museveni described social media as a luxury by those who are enjoying themselves or those who are malicious. All the moral reasons are in favor of that tax, he says. As Gambia awaits a new constitution, many in Banjul have reacted to news of the drafting of the new Charter of Laws that will shape the lives of many in the new democratic dispensation. At a news conference in Banjul, the chairperson of the newly inaugurated Constitutional Review Commission said that the commission is independent and does not represent any particular interest group, saying that the process will be open, transparent, and impartial, and that it will give an opportunity to all Gambians to voice their views. From Banjul, Sene Marena reports.
Their task is to draft a new constitution for the Republic of the Gambia, and by doing so, to review the 1997 constitution, seek the opinions of all Gambians both home and abroad through consultation to ensure inclusivity in the country's charter of law set to govern the affairs of the new Gambia.
The commission wishes to reiterate the following to the Gambian public. First, The commission is independent and does not represent any particular interest group. All the members of the commission recognize that the objective we are embarked upon is a national one, and it is one in which all interests have to be received and considered in accordance with the guiding principles enshrined in the CRC Act.
The CRC is expected to make appropriate proposals and drafts within a period of 18 months to stand the test of time and guarantee participation in the formation of the new constitution. This is Justice Jallow's first press since assuming office as chairperson of the Constitutional Review Commission. The sitting legal luminary, assisted by 10 other commissioners, is fully aware of the task ahead.
We have therefore invited you here today to share with you progress about the work of the commission to date, some of the challenges, and the way forward to ensure that the review process is characterized by a high level of participation and inclusiveness that will promote citizenship and ownership of the new constitution we have been mandated to draft.
Meanwhile, Gambians both home and abroad have reacted to the drafting of the new constitution.
What Gambians have seen over the years is our constitution being butchered by a leader who only wants to have everything his way. Each time he feels that he's not getting something the way that he wants it, he will turn to the constitution and get the lawmakers to change it. So now we cannot wait to have a constitution that would work for every Gambian.
I think it is a good move by the government to put up a new constitution. Like we know, we always said the 1997 constitution is Jammeh's constitution. And the new constitution that is will be that they are working on now will also help Gambia to get rid of the old laws in place, the draconian laws that were in place.
We have hopes that it will promote good governance and constitutional democracy in the country. So the previous constitution, which is the 1997 constitution, has seriously been tampered with. It was, you know, tampered in a way that will consolidate, you know, totalitarian, you know, kind of administration in the country. Coming up with a constitution that will promote, you know, pluralism, mm-hmm. democracy, constitutional democracy will really, you know, improve growth and democracy in this country.
Commissioners have commenced work towards the complete review and drafting of a new constitution. The Constitutional Review Commission Act 2017, which gave birth to the Constitutional Review Commission, promote adherence to national values, separation of power, national unity, cohesion, and peace, as well as periodic democratic elections based on universal adult suffrage via a transparent system which include the introduction of a term limit for serving in the office of president. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Seni M.K. Marena.
In Cameroon, the government is arguing children in the eastern part of the country to stop leaving school to work in the gold industry. The campaign was launched after a report said that 74 people have been killed in mine accidents this year, a majority of them of school age. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports.
A group of five Cameroonian teenagers and a Central African refugee are digging through a riverbed searching for gold. One carries a newborn on her back as she turns over the dirt and mud, looking for the precious nuggets. These kids, ranging in age from 11 to 15, are some of children who have dropped their studies to dig for gold. The youth say Chinese companies pay them $1 a day for their labor and a bonus if they find gold. Government authorities have told locals to stop digging in the area, but the need for income is so high that many ignore the order, including refugees who leave their camps and parents whose kids should be in school. Yves Bertrand Alenu is a senior divisional officer in the Lom and Jerem administrative unit. He is going village to village asking locals to leave gold mines alone and for parents to return their child minors to their studies.
The first message is a message of sympathy of the public authorities that we represent. But most especially, we want to ask them to stop exploiting in this dangerous area. As they all know and they have seen for themselves, it is very dangerous.
A report published in July by the government and private researchers said 50 people were killed mining for gold in eastern Cameroon last year. The number has jumped to over 70 in just the first half of 2018. In one of the worst incidents, 9 Cameroonians and Central African refugees were killed when a gold mine collapsed on them in the town of Ngoura last December. Michel Pilou, chief of Mali Village, says the Chinese mining companies are not only exploiting their natural resources, but also their children.
Ils ne font que exploiter Mali dans le vide, nous mettre dans le vide. Même la construction des
He says the Chinese companies don't build any schools for the children. And when the child miners dig the water beds, contaminating their only source of drinking water, the Chinese refuse to provide alternative sources such as constructing wells. He says many people have become sick for drinking contaminated water and others have died in landslides. Vincent Atangana, a Cameroonian official at Chinese mining firm Ixel, blames parents for allowing their kids to work in the firms. He argues Chinese mining has helped develop the area.
Quand nous arrivions ici, le marché était périodique tous les jeudis. Maintenant, il y a
He says many houses are being constructed with modern materials. Several years ago, fuel was sold in cans, but today, says Atangana, there are fuel stations. He says these developments are coming when gold mining is still at a working stage. They will do even more when it reaches the industrial level. Alenu says the government has warned parents and instructed Chinese mining firms to stop hiring school-age laborers. But with high demands for gold from China and jobs in eastern Cameroon, there is little enforcement. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ngoura, eastern Cameroon.
Thank you, Moki Edwin Kinzeka. And in a story related to that, in Zimbabwe, the United Nations has welcomed a decision by the country's High Court to protect children from being forced to attend political rallies. It's a development which is likely to be a dent on the ruling ZANU-PF, which has been forcing school children to attend its rallies to swell numbers as the country prepares for July 30th elections. From Harare, reporter Sebastian Mofu has more on this story.
Those are primary school learners at a recent ruling ZANU-PF party rally in Mashingo, about 350 kilometers south of Harare. Thanks to a High Court order, that is no longer going to be the case. School children will now no longer be forced to attend any political rally. They should concentrate on their books and the future. Sirak Gebrehiwot, the United Nations spokesperson in Zimbabwe, comments on the High Court ruling.
The United Nations welcomes the High Court decision to protect children from being forced to attend political rallies. This is in line with the Convention of the Right of the Child, that the best interests of the child must be of paramount consideration in every situation and at all times. The UN emphasizes schools must be havens of safety and the children must continue to have uninterrupted access to basic social services.
Human rights lawyer Doug Coulthard petitioned the High Court on behalf of Zimbabwean rural teachers who were worried about the continued disruption of their students' learning. The High Court ruled that no to learners being forced to attend political rallies and no to their school buses being used to ferry people to rallies, as has been the case over the past years. But that is not all, as Obed Masaraure, the president of Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, one of the applicants in the case, explains to VOA.
We say this is a big victory, not for the schools only, but for Zimbabwe. We have attempted to use other channels, especially engaging the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, to ensure that we bar ZANU-PF from forcing learners to be frog marched into rallies. Teachers must not be forced to donate to private political party process. Secondly, they must not be forced to attend rallies, and school property should not be abused. So we had no other remedy but to seek from the High Court. Learners, beyond losing learning time, when they are being dragged, they are also being indoctrinated, so that their thought process is also not going to be the same after a political process of indoctrination.
As Zimbabwe goes into what it is calling the home stretch to the July 30th polls, the first without its founding leader, Robert Mugabe, whose nearly four decades at the helm ended last November after his resignation after giving in to military pressure, it remains to be seen if the ruling ZANU-PF party will not close schools to swell numbers using learners as per High Court order. In the past, some teachers, especially in rural areas, had to flee the country, fearing victimization for refusing to participate in ZANU-PF politics. In the general election, due in 3 weeks' time, Mugabe's successor, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, locks horns with 40-year-old Nelson Chamisa, the leader of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, a coalition of opposition parties, among other 21 presidential aspirants. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A UN human rights official is asking the government of the Central African Republic to establish, without delay, a Truth and Reconciliation Commission as a pathway to peace. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the independent expert on human rights in the Central African Republic, CAR, spoke Wednesday to the UN Human Rights Council.
Marie-Thérèse Keïta-Bokoum welcomes progress made in institutional reforms this year. But she says authorities in the Central African Republic have to do much, much more to repair the country's chronically troubled security and political situation. She says escalating attacks by armed groups are traumatizing the population, which is losing trust in the ability of the government to protect it. She deplores the hate speech employed by several factions, which in many cases has a dangerous religious component. Keïta-Bokoum condemns the growing number of what she calls odious attacks against aid workers and UN peacekeepers. She says it is vital to bolster protection for human rights in the country, in particular economic and social rights. She says the establishment of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission is an important element in this mix. She speaks through an interpreter.
The government shared with me its determination to develop a transitional justice strategy which would consist of dealing with the mass atrocities committed in the past, establishing culpability, guaranteeing non-repetition of conflict, and restoring trust and national social cohesion. It includes judicial and non-judicial mechanisms, including the Truth Commission, institutional reform, and reparation.
Keïta-Bokoum says the willingness on the part of the government deserves stepped-up support from the international community.
The situation in the CAR is becoming unbearable. It reveals more than ever the urgent need to simultaneously bolster protection of civilians, humanitarian aid, combating impunity, and peace initiatives and development.
The CAR ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Leopold Samba, agrees with the independent expert's assessment of the situation and is appealing for greater international support. He calls the displacement of 600,000 people and the deaths and injuries of some 4,000 people in the CAR's long-running civil war unacceptable. Samba says additional measures are needed to restore peace throughout his country's battered national territory. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And now for some World Cup news with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, Jackson, and welcome to our continuous coverage of the 2018 FIFA World Cup right here in Russia. As the quarterfinal matches of the World Cup begins on Friday, many of the host cities have seen their final games. Gone are Saranax, Volgograd, where England played their first game against Tunisia, and Kaliningrad, as well as Ekaterinburg, for venue farthest east. And now to the quarterfinal matches. Fleet-footed France will have to find a way past the tournament's joint meanest defenders, Uruguay, in the first of two Intercontinental World Cup opener finals on Friday. The South Americans kept Portugal's Cristiano Ronaldo at bay in their 2-1 last 16 win, and that goal conceded was the only one against them so far in Russia, a defensive feat only matched by Brazil, who play Belgium later on Friday. But France banked in 4 goals in their last 16 game against Argentina and will be hoping their formidable attacking trio of Antoine Griezmann, Olivier Giroud and Kylian Mbappe can turn it on again at the Nizhny Novgorod Stadium. On the surface though, Uruguay look relaxed and their experienced central defenders Jose Gimenez and Diego Godin are relishing the chance to foil both Mbappe and their friend and Atletico Madrid teammate Griezmann. The winners will play Brazil or Belgium, who meet in their quarterfinals in Kazan on Friday evening for a place in the July 15th final. Staying with the quarterfinal pairings, Jamie Vardy is in doubt for the World Cup quarterfinal against Sweden after picking up a groin injury in the shootout win over Colombia. The Leicester City striker was expected to take a penalty in the dramatic victory, but Eric Dier had to step up in his place. Vardy, who usually takes penalties for his club, had an injection in his groin immediately after the game to treat the injury, which he picked up during extra time, and faces a race to be fit for the next knockout match on Saturday. And now to some latest news regarding some coaches at the 2018 World Cup. Switzerland coach Vladimir Petkovic-Zorb is not at any risk following their disappointing World Cup exit, at least the head of the country's football association has announced. Petkovic has a contract until 2020. And the Switzerland Football Federation president, Peter Gillion, speaking one day after their 1-0 defeat by Sweden in the round of 16, said there was no question of his contract being reviewed. But it's a different news from Costa Rica, where the Football Federation has parted ways with coach Oscar Ramirez after a disappointing World Cup showing by the Central American nation. The Federation's president, Rodolfo Villalobos, told a press conference that Oscar Ramirez will not continue as coach as his contract has expired. And that's the latest World Cup update. I am Samson Omale in Moscow, Russia. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have yourself a good day. And that's it for this Thursday, July the 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clody and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clody, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.